Okay, gentlemen, we are we're ready to begin the third section of the Contemporary Halacha Fall 2016 final Chazara. And we have to do four shiurim, four topics today: Hilchas Yichud, Dina Debachus Adina, Hilchas Mezuzah, and Bris Mila. Let's start with Hilchos Yichud. The point of Yichud is a state of seclusion, nothing to do with indoors or outdoors. It could be even outdoors. What are the three steps of history for Hilchos Yichud? We start with the pasuk in Chumash, Ki Yisischa Achicha, which the Gemara and the Achronim explain how it could be, refers to the history of Yichud with at least an erva. And after that, so we only know Arayas. Subsequently, in the Shmuel Beis, David summons Amnon, love Tamar, and his friend suggested a way to take advantage of Tamar, and at that point, Gozru based in Shel David HaMelech, that Yichud for Pnuya, even though she's not an Erva, Yichud for Pnuya will also be Aser. And even if she's not an Erva, she's not an Ida, she's Mataris and Gansen, still will be Aser. And the third stage was in Isser Drabban that Hillel and Shammai, Gozru al Yichud Shel Goya. Now, the concept, next point, the concept of Yichud as a Geder, which we assume fundamentally is Nisr Darais, at least with an Erva, we pointed out that Tosa says that it's only Yichud Daraisa if it's between one man and one woman. If there are multiple people there, there can still be an Nisr of Yichud, but that will never be an Nisr Yichud Mida Araisa. That will only be an Nisr Yichud Darabaran. So that which we do see, that Yichud, which is Daraisa, seems to be Geder Min HaTorah. We have some precedent for Geder Min HaTorahs and other halachas as well, in Nagia, the Isser of Netira Belev, Atu Nekima, Bishol Basa B'Cholav, Atu Achila, owning Avon Lo Yebuch Kischa Evan V'Aven, owning faulty weights, Atu Stealing, Bayra, Atu Eating Chametz, the Nazir, Mishras Anavim, Chametz Yain, Atu Drinking, Chatzi Shir, Atu Shir. So we have precedent for the concept of a Geder Min HaTorah. What most often comes up, certainly in the dating situation, is what's the halacha for Nida, Yichud with a Nida? Is that, is she considered an Erva or not? Machlokas, on one hand, there is Tfisas Kiddushin with a Nida. On the other hand, she is listed in the Parish of Arayas, So the maskana of the post is that Nida is an Erva, and therefore Yichud with a Nida, in other words, Yichud with a single girl and a single guy on a date, would be Nisr Mida Araisa. Next point. As far as the ages, of course, a boy is Talia on Roy Labia, which is 9, a girl when she's 3 years old, but that Isser is not on the boy nor on the girl. It's only on the bar mitzvah or the bas mitzvah who's with a bar mitzvah boy who's with a 3-year-old girl, or bas mitzvah girl who's with a 9-year-old boy. If the boy is under bar mitzvah and the girl is under bas mitzvah, so you have a 12-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. We'll go next door. We'll go next door.
Oh, best room, sir.
Okay.
Sorry to displace you.
Okay, sorry for that interruption. We'll continue. The halacha also is, as we were saying, that only someone who's chayiv in mitzvos is obligated in yichud. Therefore, a guy is not obligated in yichud. Therefore, a 12-year-old boy can have yichud with an adult woman who's not a Jewish. Similarly, an adult man who's not Jewish could have yichud with a katana, even an 11-year-old girl, even though she's really be, of course. But if it's with a man who's above, who's a Gentile man, there's no isur yichud. Let's talk about somebody who's elderly. So we have the chiluk that Rav Moshe says that if he knows that he can't, he knows himself that he's not able to have bia, so there won't be, will be mekla on yichud midrabanan. However, if she's, what's an example of yichud midrabanan, like a pnuya tahora, or a gaya perhaps. However, if he's clinically diagnosed that he can't have bia, and then we would permit yichud entirely. Next point, what is the shiur of yichud? So the Gemara says, k'delitzlas beitzo l'gama. The Dvar Halacha says that he measured how long it takes to roast and to swallow eggs, and he got a very chamidah kashita of 35 seconds. Ramosha, Rabbi Yashiv holds somewhere between a minute and a half. Ramosha has a very important kula, and says that that's shir is only for the act itself, but you also have to add the time to be mefat, to get undressed before and to get dressed afterwards, to look, you know, proper again afterwards. And then if it's something that you don't know, then you also have to add time that might be necessary for pitui. So it might end up being a significantly longer period. But of course, these are all to define what is yichud. But once there is a situation of yichud, it's aser even to be for a moment. In terms of a sister, we saw that even though you're allowed to be miyachid with your mother, grandmother, daughter, granddaughter, but a sister is aser bekvius. We don't have any specific definition, but we assume it's 30 days. Rav Savlovsky had the aura that if somebody has no idea where they're moving into their sister's apartment with no plans at all, they don't know if they're going to graduate school, going to, you know, learn, sitting and learning, or looking for a job, that might already be a kvius, even if it's shorter than 30 days. Next point is going to be how many people constitute yichud. So for here we have the Mishnah in Kiddushin, which of course says that one woman is permitted to be misyached with two men. That's mutter. However, there's a limitation that those two men have to be ksherim. If they're prutzim, then it doesn't help. Also, this heter is only be'ir. But therefore, if it's baderech, then you'll need a third man to be in accompaniment. Now, when we talk about a different definitions of a parutz, we said that this heter of two men is only if they're not prutzim. What's a parutz? So we had different pshatim. We had the fascinating pshat of Bill Yashiv that maybe somebody who even was accustomed to watching TV. That was just a side point. When there are prutzim, for example, non-Jews who have an objective halacha status of prutzim, regardless of how upstanding morally they might be individually, so then you have to have a heter only if it's nashim harbe with anashim harbe. How many do you need to have this heter, which is not even yichud, right? Presumably it's not yichud, it's just a lot of people. So there's a three-way machlokas, is two and two enough, three and three enough, or maybe two men and three women. So Rav Moshe, even though the Mechad, the Ramah, says that two men would be enough.
With two women?
Even though two men and three women are enough, Rav Moshe is machmir that you should try to have three and three. Now, the Rambam, of course, those of you who are Sfaradim, has a tremendous chumrah in this area and says that all of us are considered prutzim. When the Gemara says that parutz doesn't have the heter of two men, so all of us considered a prutzim, and therefore, according to the Rambam, there will never be a heter of two men with one woman. Because in order to be a kasher, you have to be a mamash the ksherim, like the great tzaddikim, and therefore those Sfaradim who follow that Rambam will never be able to have two men and one woman. They'll have to have Noshim Harbe with Anoshim Harbe, which we explained just a moment ago, would be, you know, let's say, ideally three men and three women. Now, when we say this heter that applies, at least not for the Rambam, but for Ashkenazim, for two men and one woman, that's only if you're Ba'ir, but of course, if it's Baderach, then you need one more man. Similarly, the chashash is because with baderach somebody might go to the bathroom, and if it's only two guys and one of them goes to the bathroom, you'll be left with one and one, which is a problem. The Ravid, based on that, adds a concern that so to balayla, one person will fall asleep, you'll be left again with one and one. So therefore, balayla, you have to add a third man to the mix to make it mutter. For to have the heter of two men and one woman, you have to add a third man. When is layla? This is very important. Layla is not a chalos din layla, but it's whenever the people here happen to be people who go to sleep. So if in your apartment you guys go to sleep at 3 in the morning, so you could have two men and one woman, two roommates in the apartment with one girl visiting until 3 a.m., that would be mutter because it's not time to go to sleep yet. Okay, now let's switch the coin and talk about a different case. Yeah?
If there's one person present that you're allowed to be in the yachid, let's say one of the two guys is her brother.
Yeah, that's a shomer. So in general, you have to know whenever we don't cover shomer in this year. But if there would be a shomer there, meaning somebody who one is allowed to be with, that saves everybody from the yichud, right? Okay. So the Mishnah says that two women cannot be with one man. If there's lo yisyachid, that's the question you asked me, Mr. Anijar. Miss Anijar, you asked me a moment ago. So if you have one man, that's going to be usher to be with two women. And the Gemara says, because Daitan Kala, so maybe he'll seduce both women. Based on that, Rashi says, yeah, but physically, Even if you might be able to, Rashi says that we're worried, what does it mean that he'll seduce both women? He'll be baal both. Based on that, the poskim say, the Rama says, if there were three women present, it would physically be impossible for a man to have the koach to be baal three women, one after the other. Therefore, there would not be an iser yichud according for three men. So if you have three men, I'm sorry, I said it wrong, for three women. So if you have one man with two women, that's asa medina de mishnah. If you have a third woman there, one man with three women, there Rashi's shita, which is cited by the Rama, is that it will be mutter to have yichud. You should just know that Ramosha doesn't like that kula of three women, but the Rama does say it, and Paschal is that way. Now this heter that we say that three women would be mutter, the Rama's kula, is physically, if you can't be with them, so I don't care if they're prutzos, if they're goyos, the point is that you can't physically be with three women, so it's going to be mutter, and therefore if a person finds himself at work, let's say you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, and you have three nurses, three secretaries, whatever, they're all women, even if they're non-Jewish, even if they're prutzos, they're not religious, whatever it might be, it'll be mutter in that circumstance because they're three women. Similarly, if you have three nieces, you could babysit them, even if they're older than 3 years old, since they're three. But that's all the kula of Rashi cited by the Rama, but Ramosha doesn't like that kula. Of course, that kula that we have of Rashi, that you need three, is only by day. By night, we're going to worry that one will fall asleep, so you have to add a fourth woman to the mix. Let's go to the next point. The next point is, when is there a heter of Yichud Pesach Pasuach L'Rishus HaRabim? What's the Geder of Pesach Pasur Shur Sarah? Well, what's the Svara? The Svara is either that you're scared somebody might come in, or the Svara Lahakel is that people passing by see inside. Well, the Nafkamina is, does the door have to be ajar, that somebody could actually see inside as they pass by? Or no, it is sufficient if the door is simply unlocked, even though it is closed to the door, the doorstep is, you know, slammed shut, but the door is unlocked. Is that enough? So that's Machlokas. And although Rabbi Kveger, the base mayor, say that it has to be open and you have to be able to look inside, but we already have Rishonim, but the Rashba and Rabbi Yona say that as long as it's unlocked, there's a chash, there's a concern in the people inside, Shemi Yikanes, and therefore it's mutter to remain in an unlocked door, with an unlocked door, even if the door is closed. However, since the whole concern, the whole kula, is based that somebody might walk in, it's only going to be as early as people are actually walking around the streets and might walk into my house. But after, after 11:30 at night, no one's walking down the streets, walking into, knocking on doors, so you won't have that kula. As opposed to if you held the other sheet, the machmir sheet, that said that the door has to be wide open, then it would be mutter 24/7, because you're always worried somebody walking by might walk by, just happen to walk in. Now this kula that the Rashba said, Rav Yona says, that the door is unlocked, would apply its mashma even we don't expect anyone to come in. That's what the Rashba seems to say. Even if you don't expect anyone to come in, you still have this kula. The Radvaz disagrees with that. So if you have a therapy session where it's expected that no one, the door is closed, but you don't expect anyone coming in to the middle of the therapy session, or some other medical session, it should still be mutter, even though the Radvaz would say, no one's expected to come in. Not allowed. But the Rashba says that it's mutter because emas rabim olav beteva. Similarly, even though the Radvaz is machmir in the case where you don't expect someone to walk in, the Radvaz has a different kula. If you do have numerous closed doors, one after the other, after the other, after the other, like in an attic or in a basement, and there are five closed doors, well, since each one is unlocked, the Radvaz permits it. Another concern is that the kula Pesach Pasuach does not apply if it's gasba. So if you're too friendly, whatever the gedder is, that's a whole other shear, that you don't have the kula of Pesach Pasuach. So for example, maybe if you're engaged already to a girl, maybe you're going out for a very long time, both of you sort of on the same page, you know you like each other, that perhaps you will not have the heter Pesach Pasuach, you'll have to figure out another solution to the... his situation of the Yichud. We'll just finish off with the point that Ramosha makes in terms of going to doctors. Ramosha says that you should make sure that normally we have a heter that a woman could go to a female could go to a male doctor because he's tar b'malachto, and therefore he doesn't have taiva. The problem is once he finishes working, then there would no longer be the heter taiva malachto because he finished doing his job. Now we're worried maybe he'll do something. Then for that we have to have the kula of the fact that there are other people in the office who are, if they see, the nurses see, or the secretary sees that he's waiting, dilly-dallying too much in his office, something's up. So there, as long as there would be two women, or three women, I'm sorry, in the office, that would be, as long as there are some people in the office, that would be okay. If there's no one else in the office, if it's you're the last patient, then there would not be a heter of going to a doctor. If you're the last patient, then the secretary or nurses have already left. That's the end of that shiur. Let's go to Hilchos Mezuzah. In general, the mitzvah mezuzah is only on a bayis. Bayis means dalet amos by dalet amos, which is 7'3". According to Reb Chaim, no, it's a little bit less. It's a foot less than that. Now, the question will be, what if it's not 4x4, but it's 8x2? Is that enough? So the Rambam says, yeah, that's also chayev. You have 16 square feet, that's chayev. The Rush is making and says, no, you have to have a minimum of 4 amos on each side. So therefore, the Shach says to be machmir for the, you know, to take into consideration each opinion, you put it up without a, you put up a mezuzah without a bracha. Now, in terms of the use of the room, let's say you have a room that's less than 4x4, but it is used for its, whatever its purpose is, like a tiny porch, a base sha'ar, you know, one of these security booths outside. They're less than four by four, but it is using its use. So there, the Chamudei Daniel is mechadesh that it would be chayev even less than dalad by dal, which is a chiddush and it's a chumra. But we minigasui machmir that to consider that chayev in a mezuzah, at least without a bracha. Oh, let's say you have a walk-in closet. That's exactly the situation. If you could walk in there, so it's a usable room, even if it's less than dalad dal, the Chamudei Daniel would say you have to have a mezuzah going into that room. Hallways could be a similar situation. Perhaps, hallways also might, that are less than 4x4, might also be in the situation of they have a purpose. So for that, Rabbi Aaron Feldman's son, says that by hallways, we do put up a mezuzah. We are machmir for the Chamudei Daniel. Less so by closets. However, with closets is another issue, and that's Rebbe Kveger. Rebbe Kveger says that, wait a second, if a room is less than 4x4, no, it doesn't need a mezuzah, not like the Chamudei Daniel suggested, but wait a second, if you're going from a room, from a closet into a room, hey, going in that direction, closet into the room, or the porch, tiny porch into a big room, there you will need a mezuzah. So that's going to end up being on the right side of the, from the closet into the room, which is called on the left side of the room into the closet. And Rabbi Simon doesn't like that because that's basically erasing the whole concept of derech biyascha, which is that you have to go in straight, and here you're saying, yeah, when you go in, you don't need to visit, but when you come out, you know, don't call coming out of the closet into the room called, you know, the Rebbe Kveger understands that going from a closet to a room is called a bia. No, that should be a yitzia. You're leaving the closet. That's not called a bia into the room. Fine. So Rabbi Simon doesn't like Rabbi Kveger, and therefore, according to Rabbi Kveger, you would put the mezuzah on the left side going into the closet, meaning the right side from the closet into the room. The Chamudei Daniel would have said the other way, the right side into the closet. Of course, next point. The Rambam, of course, says that the only time that you chayv in a mezuzah is a room that has a door on it. And the Shach therefore says that if we're machmir to put a mezuzah on an archway or a doorway, even if there's no door, but the Shach says, of course, be machmir l'rambam and omit the bracha. Next point, let's talk about shlisha elyon. If you place a mezuzah on the wrong side, or too low, or too high, you're not yotzi at all. It's the wrong side that we just sort of discussed a little bit. Too low is going to be below the upper third. Too high means within the top tefach of the mezuzah, of the doorpost. Those situations, you're not yotzi at all. Therefore, if you have a kindergarten or a kid's room, and you want to put the mezuzah lower up, lower on the height of the mezuzah, the doorpost, that will not even be yotzi b'diyavid. So therefore, l'chatchila, you should put the mezuzah on the bottom part of the shlish ha'elyon. If you have a situation where there's a very tall door, the Yerushalmi says that you should put it at shoulder height. So that seems to be a steer to what we said earlier, that it has to be at the bottom of the shlish ha'elyon. So the Chazon Ish, the Nesivos, says no. When we say We don't have a stira between the Bavli that says Shlisha Elyon and the Yerushalmi says that you put it at shoulder height. It's not a stira. It's just that the Bavli says you put it at the Shlisha Elyon, the bottom of the Shlisha Elyon, because that's where the shoulder normally is. It happens to be that when you have a very tall door, the Shlisha Elyon is much higher. So then you should continue doing at shoulder height. That would be, therefore there's no stira between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Okay, the halakha is that in terms of which point in the width or the depth of the doorway do you put the mezuzah, it's supposed to be on the outermost part of the door to maximize the shmir, meaning the closer the mezuzah is to the outermost point of the door, the more area that you're protecting behind the backside of the mezuzah. Next point, if a person's moving and they're going to leave their mezuzah there, so the halakha is, the Gemara says explicitly, you're not allowed to take away a mezuzah if a Jew is going to be moving in. So therefore, if you don't know, if a non-Jew is moving in, you're permitted to take it with you, perhaps even should. If you don't know who's moving in, you could take the mezuzah with you. If a Jew is moving in, so the Ramah has a kula and says that, yeah, you have to leave the mezuzah, but you could charge the guy for the mezuzah that you're leaving. And if he doesn't want to pay, then you're allowed to take it. Others disagree. The Aruch HaShulchan says, no, if he doesn't want to pay, you have to leave it anyway. You should just know that here, the poskim also, in general, the poskim are a little bit machmir. Very, I had a case. Somebody was moving out, and they sold the house, and they sold it with the mezuzah. They didn't make any exceptions in the contract, and there were like 23 mezuzahs on the house. And they asked me after the house was sold, when they were moving out, and I basically told them they have to leave. 23, it was a $2,000 deal. I told them they couldn't take the mezuzahs with them. If they would have arranged it beforehand, they could have played games. They could have, we'll paint. Maybe they'll do some painting. Painting, you could take the mezuzahs off for painting. Maybe you'll switch good mezuzahs for cheap ones. Right, a cheap mezuzah is $35, $40. An expensive mezuzah could be $100, $150. But they asked too late. Which kind of rooms need a mezuzah? So the otzar, a base otzar, a storage place, the Shulchan Aruch says it is chayiv and a mezuzah. However, Yaakov Kamenetsky says that's only storage place that's part of your dir. But if you have like a self-storage room, a mile and a half from your house, that would not need. If you have a garage is definitely needing mezuzahs, but it could be that, if it's... even if it's attached to your house, certainly. But even if it's disattached, you would still put up a mezuzah. However, since this whole sugya that even though we pass that a beis otzer is chayv and a mezuzah, the Rambam's shita is that a beis otzer doesn't need. It's a very complicated sugya in the Gemara, and the Rambam is meka. It says you don't need a mezuzah. So therefore, if it's a disattached to the garage, then maybe you'd put up the mezuzah without a bracha, in deference to that shita's Rambam. A shul is potter unless there's a shamus or somebody who lives there. Beis medrash, however, is 2 days in a Shulchan Aruch. The reason why it's more machmer than a bais is because people are sitting and learning there and eating there and living there all day. It's more like a dira, and therefore we do put a you don't have to put one up on a shul, but you should put one up on a beis medrash, but without a bracha because of the machlokas. As far as an office building, well, the Shulchan Aruch has a line that says chanus is potter. The question is, what's a chanus? A chanus might have been, the Pesach Shuva says, maybe chanus is only one of these makeshift market stores with at a fair, but if you have a permanent store, you wouldn't need. So, l'maisa, mikra hatin, an office is probably potter, but the minhag is to, yes, have a mezuzah, so therefore Rabbi Simon likes to say that if there's a worker who feels it would be very awkward or uncomfortable to put a mezuzah where he works for, there's room to be mekel, to not put one up. In terms of when a person moves into an apartment, so once you move into a house, so you have to put up a mezuzah the day you move in, if it's a house that you own. If it's a rental, whether it's a rental of a house or an apartment, that doesn't matter. But if it's a rental, then there's a question, because the chiyuv of schiros is only after lamed yom. Schiros is patur kol lamed yom. So if the chiyuv begins on day 31, so maybe you should wait till you chayiv on day 31 and then put up the mezuzah. And so that's the discussion. Let's discuss for a minute. In the Nesivus' Sitter, he says that when do we say that day 31 is the chiyuv? That's if you don't know if you're staying. So once you're there for 30 days, that shows you're already kavod. But if you know you're going to be there for long term, then you should put the mezuzah up right away, because you know you're going to be there. So then the chiyuv clicks in right away. Ramosha says that because of this nesivis, maybe you'll do it right away. Others say you should wait till the 31st day. So Ramosha has a very complicated opinion that you should put the mezuzah up right away without a bracha. And then on the 31st day, you should, you know, put your hand on the mezuzah, touch the mezuzah, and then you should say a bracha, but that's a little bit shver because you're making a bracha without a ma'isa of kviyas mezuzah. So Rabbi Simon just likes to say, just if you're signing a lease and you know you're going to be there, so then put up a mezuzah, say a bracha right away. There is a, finally, we'll finish this year, there's a halacha that a bedroom where a husband and wife are sleeping, what do we do with the mezuzah? Because also the shamish mitaslef may kisvei kodesh. So if the door is mafsik, if the door is closed and the mezuzah is on the outside and the door is inside that and then the bedroom is inside of that, so the door is mafsik. But if the door is not mafsik, so then we have a number of solutions. Rabbi Simon this year didn't speak them all out clearly, but he referenced them. I'll just explicate what those are. Aruch HaShulchan says, we'll present four shitas from Hakal HaLachomer. The Aruch HaShulchan, which Rabbi Simon mentioned this year, says, hey, if this Hashem said, put mezuzahs on your doorways, and the same Hashem says that you can't be meshamish lefnei mitaso, he realizes that doorways include bedrooms. So obviously Hashem doesn't mind if you put a mezuzah on your bedroom. It must be mutter. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, you know what? If it's attached to a wall, that makes it like a reshus bifnei atzmo. Therefore, it's attached to a wall, you don't have to be worried. Chayodim says, you know what? It is a problem. So you have to have two wrappings. Of course we have, so if you have two wrappings, the one inside you wrap it in like a little, wax paper or plastic wrap, and then you have another wrapping on the outside of it. You should have in mind that the first wrapping is not meyuchad lekach, it's l'shem ahefsek, and that will solve the problem. And finally, the stipler held that you should just sort of hang a nail above the mezuzah and hang a shirt over the mezuzah b'shas tashrish, and that would solve the problem. Okay, that's the shir on mezuzah. Let's go to Bris Mila. Are we attend this shir? So, the issue of okay, so let's talk about using anesthetics for a mila. So there's a medrash that talks about the pain, how wonderful it was that Avraham Avinu had the pain, and therefore some suggest not, based on that medrash, not to use anesthesia, which and the Rabbi Tendler wondered, questioned that proof, because, wait a second, if Avraham Avinu wanted more schar for himself, gezut d'heit, but what right does that give a father to say that, oh, I want my baby to get more schar and impose pain on the baby, so therefore Rabbi Tendler thought you should be able to give some kind of anesthesia to make it more comfortable for a baby. There's something called hypospadia if the aver is too short. So there are different levels of seriousness. If it's a serious hypospadia that the urination, you have to sit down to urinate, then you might want to postpone the bris. If it's just minimal hypospadia and it's just the urine goes on a diagonal there, Rabbi Tendler suggests you do it immediately. In terms of low weight for a baby, apparently, according to medical profession, once the baby's 4 pounds, there's no medical objection. Even if sometimes a mom might say, no, I don't want to do a mila before 5 or 6 pounds. So Rabbi Tendler wondered, what right does the mole have to be more frum than the doctors? And also, is a low weight considered a chola that you have to wait 7 days after achieving health? So Moshe says, no, chola is a chola. Low weight's not a chola, and you don't have to wait for an additional week, right? When the baby is ready for the mila, is as at the target weight, then you could do the mila immediately without having to wait an extra week. In terms of bilirubin, Rabbi Tendler was not happy that certain molim would just say, oh, bilirubin is at this number or that number. This number, I'll do a mila, that number, not do a mila. Because the way bilirubin works is that it shifts. It depends on how many hours after birth. It depends on what stage you're at. So if at this day bilirubin is at a certain number, is totally unrelated to what it is a few hours earlier or later. So therefore, you don't just look at the number in a vacuum. You have to see at the time that the bris is supposed to be, where is the bilirubin at that time. Then you decide, is it dangerous or is it not dangerous? A moral shouldn't just choose a number and say, you know, 12. I don't do bris if the bilirubin is above 12. As far as the, when we mentioned the concept of a chola, that you have to wait 7 days, the 7 days that we have to wait for a chola are 7 days that are me'es la'es. So if you get clearance at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that means 7 days from now, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that's when you do the bris milah, not earlier that day, and not later that evening, but right when there's that, the zman comes. The minhag is to, yes, do a milah on a dead baby, based on the medrash that Avram stands on Pischa Shel Gehenim, to keep out those who aren't gemalt. The Ramah pass, next point, milah to a guy. The Ramah pass that it's also to give a bris milah to a guy, based on the Gemara Avodah Zarah, that we don't heal Goyim. Based on that, the shach comes out with the kula. Let's say you're not doing it for healing purposes, but for schar, then the shach would be mekel. How to deal with that nowadays, that people in our generation do bris milas for health concerns, does that mean that we're doing it for refuah purposes? That's a complicated, that's a good question. Let's talk about, so of course, if it was done in the hospital by an OBG or a pediatrician, so they're not going to need a bris milah because it's cut off already. But there's a machlokas if such a person will require hatafas dam. We're machmir that a person who did get a bris milah in the hospital by a non-Jew, by somebody who's not kosher l'amul, that person will need hatafas dam milah when they subsequently become bal tshuva or megayer. As far as shechianu, well, in Eretz Yisrael we say shechianu. In Ramah we say, in Galus we don't say shechianu. Our next point, in terms of the instrument, we could be mal with any instrument as long as it's something that doesn't splinter. For example, Tzipora herself did not use metal. She used a tzur. Fine. Let's just finish off this discussion with the concept of mitzitza in terms of both mitzitza bepeh and mitzitza on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that the mitzitza is because of sakana. So the way Rabbi Tedler understands it, there's only two parts of the milah. That's priya and Mila and Priya, and Mitzitza is not part of the Bris Mila, as Rabbi Tendler understands it, but rather it's an additional thing for Sakana purposes. Therefore, Rabbi Tendler feels very strongly, perhaps against most other poskim, that if it's not part of the Mila, how could I be able to do it on Shabbos? After all, the Mitzitza, everyone would agree, is an Issa D'Oraisa, because it's, we paskin chaburi michbar, the dam is part of the body. By you sucking it out, that would be mefarek, dash, whatever malach it's a violation of. Now, similarly, the Gemara talks, there's a steer in Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch talks about, do you wash babies with warm water after the bris milah? So the Shulchan Aruch says, in the time of the Gemara, like the Mishnah say, they'd have to wash a baby after the bris milah. But nowadays, we don't have to, because nishtanu hateva. So, based on that, Rabbi Tedler wants to say, just like Nishtanu HaTeva, when it comes to the need to wash a baby, so too we could apply Nishtanu HaTeva, or Yedias HaTeva, regarding the need to do Mitzitza on the baby. Now, therefore, Rabbi Tedler holds that based on all of our empirical studies, that we find that Mitzitza is not really necessary for health of a circumcision, because we have so many millions of Goyim who don't get mitzitza, and yet they do get circumcisions, and there's no indication that circumcision does help or doesn't help. I'm sorry, there's no indication that mitzitza does or doesn't help the surgery. So therefore, Rabbi Tendler thinks that you shouldn't be able to do mitzitza on Shabbos. You should just know that the Achronim very much are aware of this question and don't really go with this mahalak that Rabbi Tendler suggested. And the Achronim, many Achronim say that there are different, just because it seems to us that the Teva was Nishtane, so some Achronim, I think the Avnei Nezer maybe, I don't remember who it was, says that yes, even if you say Nishtane HaTeva, that might allow you to change a halacha, but a sakana, it might not be enough just to say we assume Nishtane HaTeva, and you have to have a different kind of, you have to prove that the Teva is Nishtane. In other words, it's not enough to say that we don't find any worse situation without mitzitza. You have to find definitive, there's no way to prove something. If we want to say that a mitzitza doesn't help, all we could say is that the level of proof is different for sakana as opposed to halacha. So other achronim say that, other achronim have dealt with, Newton realized this already, that there are sometimes we don't, we say nishtana teva. At the same point, many achronim say that, already for 100, 200 years ago, the achronim said that even though mitzitza might not be, or other things might not be necessary for sakana, but we still should continue doing it. despite the fact, because of the sakana concern that the Gemara tells us of. So that's, I think, an important thing that Roy Tanu did not mention. I mean, he referenced it, but that wasn't how Roy Tanu concluded in his shir. According this to this same logic, Rabbi Tanu is suggesting is that doing this mitzitza on Shabbos, if we assume that if Rabbi Tanu assumes that mitzitza is not necessary for second reasons, which again other Achronim might disagree with, but if that would be the case, like Rabbi Tanu is suggesting, then doing it on Shabbos, if it's not bikuach nefesh, should be an iser, you know, chil Shabbos midaraisa, and therefore perhaps Rabbi Tanu is suggesting you shouldn't do mitzitza on Shabbos. As far as I know, there are no mola that would actually follow that, but Rabbi Tanu is raising at least the svara should be a good argument, although the Achronim might have already rejected it because they say that if something is sakana, then we treat it as a sakana, even if it's Shabbos. Okay. Finally, we have one more shir. This is Rabbi Shatu's shir on Dina D'Malchus Adina. So the first point that we have to remember when it comes to Dina D'Malchus Adina, that's only if it's fair or not discriminatory. But if there's something like, you know, the communist tax, you know, communism, certain kinds of forms or old-time taxes, it was gezlanusa de machusa. They're unfair, unjust systems, so there we wouldn't apply dina de machusa, dina, because that would be gezlanusa de machusa. What's the source, in the very first place, for the concept of dina de machusa, dina? The Gra, the Meiri, states from the parasha of the Melech. The Melech says, Gemara tells us, I'm sorry, that everything that Shmuel HaNavi warned Bnei Israel that a Melech could do this, a Melech might do this to you, a Melech might do this to you, all those things are mutter for a Melech to do. And Rav argues and says, no, the parasha of the Melech was just to scare Klal Yisrael. You better be careful. If you want a king, he might do certain things. So we follow Shmuel that a Melech Taka has the right to do various things. And among the things that Shmuel HaNavi says in the Navi is that a Melech has the right to levy taxes. And therefore, you have to pay taxes if you're underneath the rule of a melech. That's one source for the concept of Dina D'Malchus Adina. The Ran, famous Ran and Doran that people like to quote that say you don't have to pay taxes in Eretz Yisrael says a different word. He says that the taxation is a right of a king to charge rent. It's not because of Dina D'Malchus Adina, but rather if the king is the Bailam on the land, he could charge rent. And therefore, the Ran says that in Eretz Yisrael, where every Jew owns a part of it, the authorities can charge us rent. The problem is, as Rav Shatu points out, that this run not only doesn't make it, not only do not pass, like it doesn't even make its way into as a Yesh Omer in the Ramah or the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore doesn't need to be reckoned with. It's relatively irrelevant. And we'll see soon that Rav Shatu anyway holds that taxes for a totally different reason. And the reason why taxes should be binding, Rav Shatu says, in America and any normal democracy, is that a halacha, not in Hilchos Dina D'Malchus Adina, but rather in Hilchos Shutfin. Why? Because if there are a group of people in an area who share a given need, they are even if they never agreed to have a shutfus among themselves, they are automatically entered into an automatic shutfus, and there we will apply the din of Achoriyab and Lahatos. And therefore, if the majority of people say, we need parks, so every person in that community, even somebody who's in a wheelchair who doesn't go to the park, has to pay taxes to those parks. And therefore, if the majority of people or the democracy decided that we have to pay taxes, so everybody has to pay taxes. If you don't pay taxes, it's not that you're doing something to the government, it's that you're hurting the other people in the shutfus. Among them are fellow Jews. It's not even a Gezel Akam Rav Shechter holds, it's holds Mamish, Gezel Yisrael, because we follow the Rov, which will determine the obligation to pay taxes. Those are the different opinions of taxes. Now, in terms of the parameters, yeah.
Is that even something that all the Jews don't need?
Yeah, because the Rishakta holds... all the Jews don't need it, so maybe it won't be Gezel Yisrael. That's something to consider. Don't know. But like public school, you wouldn't be able to say that, because many Jews, Orthodox Jews maybe don't use public school, but non-Orthodox Jews or people with special needs use public schools might still be a problem, according to Rishakta. Now, what does Dina D'Malchusa do? What Dina D'Malchusa does is, for one, it does a few things. First of all, it says you have to follow the law of the land, and we'll see when that applies. It also works to define what money is. If you don't hold from Dina D'Malchusa Dina, then there won't be money in a land, and money is a significant thing in halacha because, for example, pidyon ma'aser sheni has to be only on real money that is used as a currency. Also, in ribis, you have to have a din money for their various things. Now, when do we use dina d'machlokes? When does dina d'machlokes din apply? That applies when it's me and a guy. If there are two Jews, we will not follow dina d'machlokes dina, even if it comes to mamonis. If the two Jews have a dispute, we are governed by the Shulchan Aruch. So dina d'machlokes dina is only between a Jew and a guy. Therefore, when it comes to Yerusha, for example, there will never be we will never follow the dina Yerusha of the government because, by definition, if it's Yerusha is between two Jews, and dina d'machlokes will not apply. Similarly, dina d'machlokes will never apply by Isser, only by Mamonis. This issue of dina d'machlokes could also get into the discussion of kofen legaresh. Let's say in a community, we'll get there soon. Rav Henkin said that there are some situations where dina d'machlokes dina will apply even between Jews. Where is that? That's if the dina d'machlokes dina was established l'tikun hamedina. For example, rent control, minimum wage, bankruptcy law. Because here the government applied this, you know, set up this law to take care of everybody in the nation, in the city, in the state, in the government, the Jews and non-Jews alike. So therefore, Rabbi Hankin said dina d'machlokes dina would apply in between two Jews in terms of those halachos that are l'tikun hamedina. Similarly, if the Shach says, if there's a situation where halacha doesn't tell us what to do at all, then, in the absence of a halacha to dictate, we'll follow dina d'machlokes to dictate. Chazner says, no such thing in halacha. If you're the chayiv, you're pater. If you're not chayiv, then you're pater. So, the Chazner says that metzius doesn't apply, that Torah doesn't have what to say. Another case where we will not follow, where you could be interacting with another Jew and you will still follow dina d'machlokes dina, is let's say there's a business that has both Jews and non-Jews. So for example, let's say you have a case, halachas of I don't know, mekach tos. So you want a return policy. So for Jews, you have halachas mekach tos. For goyim, you have a 30-day warranty, 30-day return policy. So every guy who's going to walk into the store, it depends who he is. He's wearing yarmulke, not wearing yarmulke. You get this warranty, you get that warranty, this return policy, that return policy. So that doesn't work. So therefore, in such a case, if there would be some clients who are and aren't Jewish, we would assume that we're going to follow the umdana in this case, or the minhag hamedina in that case, and therefore we would be able to follow, the umdana would be, if you have both Jewish and non-Jewish clients, then we would follow minhag hamedina, dina d'machlokes dina, because that's just what's expected. You can't have two ways of dealing with your clients. Now, based on the concept of dina d'machlokes dina, dina d'machlokes dina, Rabbi Shechter has an interesting point where he says that when it comes to, we mentioned earlier from Rav Henkin that whenever they send us a tikkun hamedina, dina d'machlokes dina would apply between Jews. Based on that, so if we look at separation of church and state, that theoretically is the tikkun hamedina, to allow freedom of religion. If that's the case, so the government therefore says that we're now allowed to be kofa on a get. Because if we would be kofa on a get now, the government says you can't do it. Since the government's rules of separation of church and state would tell us that you can't force a get, you can't force people to give a get, so it's a violation of dina d'machlokes dina, and therefore, if you would force a get, it would be a get me'usa, and it would be possible. Why? Because of the government declared that basins aren't allowed to be called for beget. Okay, that's the end of dina d'machlokes dina. Let's move to the last part of this semester, and that is halachas mesira. The Gemara tells us that, of course, a basin is allowed to be makan v'onshin shelo kedin, and the Ran says that applies even to a non-Jewish government. So what you see from that is that even non-Jews, even a goyish government, is allowed to punish, you know, with extraordinary punishments like cutting off hands and cutting off, you know, somebody steals, cutting off the hand. That's okay. That's okay. The question is, are you allowed to call the police if somebody steals, if they cut off hands, for example? So here we have a story, Gemara above Metzia, that Rabbi Elazar Rav Shimon, son of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, was hired by the Roman government to find Jewish criminals, even though they gave the death penalty to robbers. And when he bumped into Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaNavi didn't say, "Oh, you're doing terrible things." He says, it's not proper, you know, let Hashem take care of this, you don't have to get involved with these things. And the Rishonim say, it's mashma that it's not aser to turn over a criminal to the Romans that they'll kill the criminal, it's just not a proper thing to do. So it sounds like Mikra Hadin, it is mutter, might not be proper, but it's mutter to turn over a thief to the government, even if the government would do something crazy like kill a thief. Now, the only time, the limitation is that it has to be something that halacha would also recognize as bad. Meaning, stealing, Jews also say you can't steal. So if Jews say you can't steal, if somebody would steal, you're allowed to turn them over to the authorities, even if they have a much more stringent punishment, like death or cutting off their hands, as long if you say jaywalking. There's no halacha anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that says you can't jaywalk. So if somebody jaywalks, you can't say, you can't turn them over to the authorities, because there's nothing, he didn't do anything wrong in halacha. But if something steals, then you could turn them over to the authorities, even if their punishment for stealing is way beyond what we would consider normal. Yeah. I don't know if that gives you a right to do Masira, to tell the government about that. Yeah. Unsure, but I don't think so. Now, keep in mind, the government could be makav onshin shelo ben hadin, could do more than what we think is appropriate, again, like cutting hands off. However, if the person who will be punished more than even the government says it deserves, like, let's say the government says somebody who does something bad should go to jail. And you and I know that if he gets sent to jail, he's going to get molested in jail, or he's going to be beaten by anti-Semites in jail. So then, you being most of him didn't just make him go to jail, that would have been okay, if he did an avera that the government also doesn't like. But you have no right to let him go to jail and get molested in jail, or let him go to jail and get beaten in jail. Then you would not be able to do Mesira. If it would just be to go to jail, why can't you do that? Because the government only said go to jail, not get beaten up. The government doesn't say you should go to jail to get beaten up. Therefore, that would be a limitation to the heter of Mesira. Now, the Shulchan Aruch does say that if there is a Chilul Hashem involved, if a Jew doesn't testify against another Jew, and the Goyim say, oh, he doesn't want to testify against another Jew because it's Mesira, if that would cause a Chilul Hashem, there the Jew is permitted to testify against a fellow Jew to prevent that Chilul Hashem, because the Goyim won't say, oh, he's not doing it because it's a fellow Jew. Now, there are two general cases that we do permit Mesira, meaning. What does the word Mesira mean? Mesira means handing somebody over to the government where he will get even more than he should. Like, he'll get thrown in jail and he'll get beaten up in jail. When is that? That's if somebody is Meitzar Es Harabim. A pedophile, a ganav, a con artist, an abuser. There, you're allowed to turn to the government, even if the punishment that he'll get is worse than what the government themselves want him to get. More than what it says in the books. And similarly, somebody's Makes Chavero, also there's a heter of Mesira. That was the halacha, Be'ezus Hashem. The final will be on Thursday at 1 o'clock, this Thursday, December 29th. There will be two questions on each shiur. If it's a double shiur, then there could be two or three or four questions on that topic. And you'll have the right to skip about four questions on the test. And still get 100. And I suggest the best way to chazer is to chazer your notes. What we did right now was a super duper fast review. Chazer your notes that are a little more thorough. If anybody has a very, very good set of thorough notes on the whole semester, please let me know immediately so I could send it out so everybody else could enjoy the benefits. There's no bell curve here. If everybody gets an A, that's great. If everybody doesn't get an A, that's less great. And I'll see you all on Thursday. You should have a lot of hatzlacha with the test.